Welcome to the Startup Podcast, conversations with Louisville entrepreneurs. It's Tuesday afternoon. It means it's time for a new one. I'm Dan Vonderheide. I come to you once a week and try to help people tell the stories of how to succeed in the startup community as an entrepreneur, as a small business person. This week, we have somebody who has started up, has invested, and works in the education sector. It's Suzanne Bergmeister with Sunflower Business Ventures. People allege to me that she is at the top of the connection chain in the startup community here. Very heavily involved in Venture Connectors, in the Kauffman program. She's an instructor there. And it's a really awesome, interesting conversation. I really try to get down to brass tacks to get very basic knowledge about money, quite frankly, raising money, where capital comes from and the different levels of investing and how to connect with that money. So I think you're going to find it very interesting. Suzanne is very personable and very nice. I encourage you to say hello if you ever get in the same room with her. And let's just quit messing around and here's Suzanne Bergmeister on the Startup Podcast. I guess the first thing to do is to get some background on you. I mean, you've been in the startup space for a while, not just here, but in other cities.
Well, I actually started out life as an engineer, but that was a long time ago.
Okay.
Working for the government.
Just go in, from
in,
there.
All right. Working for the government, Department of the Air Force in the aerospace industry.
All right.
I was in that for about 13 years.
Let's move your microphone a little closer. I'm going to put edit note there.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you were trained as an educated as an engineer, and you went through, you worked in the Air Force. And
yes.
And how did you get involved in the business side of startup-y, investee stuff?
Well, I was out in Southern California doing aerospace industry tech stuff, and this was about the mid-90s, and they sent me to the Pentagon for some career broadening, and what happened instead is I saw what was happening to the defense budget in the mid-90s, and it was kind of going off a cliff.
Okay.
And then I saw what was happening
cliff,
in the tech bubble.
How ironic that we're facing.
Yeah, different cliff.
Yeah, right.
And then I saw what was happening with the tech bubble and all the entrepreneurs, you know, making billions in the tech bubble, and I thought to myself, okay, which side do I want to be on? And I thought, okay, I want to be on that .com startup bubble. You know, I didn't know it was a bubble then, but that's
so
the side
you,
I wanted to be on.
So you went through the bubble burst.
Well, I had to get my MBA first because I thought there's no way I can go from working for the government in the aerospace industry to working for business.
Do you think that's still accurate?
Yeah. It's a whole different industry. It's a whole different set of skills that you need. And I knew in order to cross that bridge over into the for-profit business world, I needed an MBA, top-tier MBA.
Okay.
So I did.
Well, I mean, a lot of discussion on previous podcasts as well is what's the educational background of a typical entrepreneur? And a lot of people come from all walks of life.
But I didn't know I wanted to be an entrepreneur then. I just wanted to, I knew I wanted to play in that space.
I see.
And coming from engineering and aerospace
okay.
to play in business and
just had
tech,
to retrain your brain.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I had to retrain.
All right. Most valuable thing you've ever done maybe? Get your MBA?
Well, most valuable thing is probably getting an engineering degree first.
Okay.
Because I couldn't have gotten into the MBA that I got into without the engineering degree. And I could not have gotten into venture capital without the MBA degree.
Okay.
I couldn't have gotten into the entrepreneurial world without the venture capital experience, and it just goes on from there.
Okay, so we're starting at engineer. We've transformed to MBA.
Yeah.
And how did you get up into the world of investing?
Well, being trained as an engineer, I didn't understand marketing. I mean, it was all fuzzy to me. There was no right or wrong answer, but I understood finance, and I understood investing, and I understood spreadsheets and that kind of stuff, so I gravitated towards a concentration in finance. So I took a job actually up in Cincinnati right after my MBA, working in private equity. We had a fund of funds that invested in venture capital funds to the tune of $15 to $20 million a pop.
Okay.
And I thought to myself, you know what? Once again, I did a midlife career change. I said, I want to be on that side of the table, the VC side. That looks like fun.
And we're going to get to all of that because I think there are probably a great many people, and myself included, in this bunch, who when we talk about the money side of entrepreneurship and the different levels of and different types of investing and all of that, I think there's maybe some confusion. There's certainly a need for a layman's education.
I'll try.
As to how all that comes around. But I want to sort of talk about you at the outset here.
Okay.
Okay. So how did you come to Louisville then?
Aha. Kicking and screaming, actually. I hate to say
you're not that, leaving, but, though, are you?
Oh, absolutely not. Yeah. When I lived in Cincinnati, they kind of have a little bit of an attitude about across the river. You know, anything across the river into Kentucky is like a third world country, and why would you want to do that? So I lived in Cincinnati for 4 years.
It's much the same the way as people in Louisville think about
Indiana,
Southern Indiana.
Exactly.
And I'm from Southern Indiana,
well,
so I don't hold that.
I don't either. And okay. I reach across that river all the time. But when I was living in Cincinnati, I just figured they knew what they were talking about. And so when a headhunter called me and said he had this position down here, and I was already working in venture capital in Cincinnati.
Okay.
When he called and said he had this great position, it was a tenure track, not tenure track, that's academia. It was
we'll
a partner track position. It needed an engineering background. It needed a top tier MBA and 3 to 5 years experience in the venture capital world.
It had your name all over it.
I'm like, yeah, where is it? And he said, it's in Louisville, Kentucky. And I said, keep looking. I'm not going.
Just curious. I mean, what were your impressions of Louisville from the outside looking in at that time?
I never even looked in.
So you never
crossed the river. I was in Cincinnati. I knew nothing about Kentucky. So
not even – and this gets kind of hackneyed and cliched, but not even the Derby or the baseball bats.
I didn't know. I was born and raised on the East Coast, and then I spent 13 years in Southern California.
And
got
somewhere
my
in the
MBA
middle
in
was
upstate
us.
New York. I ended up in Cincinnati for 4 years, and – you know, they all said, why would you cross that river into Kentucky? And I thought they knew what they were talking about.
Okay.
I had no idea.
No
so
pro
I
sports.
Actually, no pro sports. Yeah. I'm a huge NHL and NFL fan. But so I came down here really just as interview practice.
Okay.
I wasn't going to work here. Are you kidding me?
And who was this with?
Chrysalis Ventures.
All right. And
that
you
was in 2002.
And you're not there anymore?
No.
Okay.
But they're who brought me here.
All right.
So I came down here, and they set me up with a wonderful realtor, and they drove me around for 2 days, and I really liked the people at Chrysalis, and everybody I met was really friendly, not just surface friendly.
You still have contacts from that era, I mean, right? I mean,
at Chrysalis?
Yeah.
Oh, I have lots of friends there.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Was that a cool atmosphere? Was that a creative-type atmosphere down there, or was it buttoned-up, suity sort of, we're crunching numbers all day?
Well, when you're dealing with investments in the millions of dollars, it's pretty
buttoned up.
Structured and pretty high stress.
Hawaiian shirt day on Friday, maybe.
Nah, we didn't really have that.
No?
No.
Man.
Yeah, it's a different world in venture capital. When you're talking millions and millions of dollars and high risk, potentially high return, you know, it tends to be very structured.
I would imagine there were very bad days on occasion.
There were very long days and very stressful days.
And if you got bad news, it was probably pretty bad news.
Yeah.
But if you got good news...
Oh, yeah. Like I said, we're talking millions of dollars one way or the other.
Man, that's like being manic depressive.
Yeah. Yeah. It was exciting, though.
What was the breakout of success versus failure in some of those ventures? Is that a 50-50 proposition? Or is...
You know, most VCs don't like to admit this, but I know what the numbers are. The numbers are if you have a fund and you plan to make 20 investments out of that fund, a good 10 of them will go belly up.
Okay.
Or return pennies on the dollar.
I thought it would have been higher than that.
No.
So, okay.
It's probably half. Probably half are, you know, return basically nothing, which means that the other half have to make up for that.
All right.
And, you know, if we're talking about, let's say,
for ease of numbers,
$100 million fund, you know, that's $50 million that just was lost.
Disappears, right.
And so the remaining 10 companies out of 20, let's say, have to return well more than 2 or 3 times the investment.
Right.
So people think venture capitalists are very greedy when they want more than 3 times their money back. But in effect, that's not being greedy because they got to make up for those 10 companies.
Sure.
Belly up.
If anything, they're being generous.
Well.
Because they're taking 20 companies and putting a little bit of faith and certainly money into it.
Well, they're putting a lot more than money into it, too. They're putting a lot of expertise
time
and energy and everything else.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Now, are you a stakeholder in any Louisville startups that you're willing to discuss?
Sure. I am via an investment vehicle that I created for the not yet accredited investor.
Which is a term that you have invented as well, right?
I invented that term. The accredited investor is a legal term, and it has a definition. And
well, let's define that then.
Okay.
Let's get nuts and bolts here.
I'm not an attorney, and I don't play one.
I get it.
But I know people that are, and the way they've explained it to me is an accredited investor. In other words, one that is legally allowed to invest in venture funds or in startup companies, has $1 million in net worth, or $200,000 in income over the last 2 years, with the indication that that would continue going forward. So okay. It's a person that has a lot of money.
The individual or household combined?
If it's a household, I think it's $300,000 over the last 2 years.
Okay, all right, just curious. But that's sort of it's not changing, but it has the potential to sort of morph with the crowdfunding thing, does it?
Absolutely.
Not? Like anybody can.
Those restrictions on accredited investor may go away or may be relaxed.
So tell us about the not yet accredited investor.
Are those? So I'm not an accredited investor. I don't have $1 million in net worth and I don't make that kind of annual income. But I figured a couple years ago I started working with a local attorney here in town and I said, there's got to be a way that we can do this, that people like me who are not yet accredited can
But love the community and
right,
want
to understand it and sure. want to be able to play in this space.
Right. There have to be tons of those people around here.
Well, oh, yeah, and I'm finding them.
Okay.
So anyway, he looked up the Reg D and all this kind of stuff and all the regulations, and he said, you know, there's a way we could do it. And I said, let's make it happen. So we created a fund for the not yet accredited investor. And, yes, I did kind of coin that term.
Well, I'm sure he can trademark it.
Well.
If he's an attorney.
Yeah.
I
didn't want to say non-accredited because that implies that we'll never be, but not yet accredited implies sure. that, well, someday I hope to be.
Yeah, they're continuing along, and especially if they're making good investments as a not yet accredited investor.
Well, and the key is my fund has to get permission to invest in an investment firm that's professionally managed.
Okay.
So my fund can't make individual investments into companies. It has to be an investor in a fund that's professionally managed.
So you get a group of people behind you and say, now we can play on this.
Yep.
Okay. So you're crowdfunding venture capital.
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay.
I did it before that term was even, you know, out there.
All right.
And my minimum investment is $5,000, whereas a lot of these funds,
let me find my checkbook.
There you go. We'll talk after. a lot of the funds, it's $100,000. Yeah, $100,000 minimum investment.
Okay.
So I figure $5,000 is not going to bankrupt me or you
or
somebody
people.
Like it. Well, no.
20 ham and eggers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why it's so attractive to the not yet accredited investor. But my fund also has accredited investors in it because they get to play with a smaller bite size.
Okay.
So they can put $5,000 or $10,000 in my fund and still get invested in this professionally managed fund.
Okay. And
I hope I'm not breaking any laws by talking about this.
I don't know if you are or not, so... Nobody's listening.
Okay, good.
are there individual companies that you invest in around town? Just somebody that?
Well, through my fund, I'm invested in a fund that invests in individual companies around town.
Okay. Can you name those names? Is there anybody you like around town that's doing something that it's like, wow, look at that. That's going to be great.
There's a lot. There's so much going on in entrepreneurship around this region. That's so exciting. That's why it's really cool to be a part of it.
I think so, too.
On both sides of the table.
I'm just a guy looking in, talking to people, but it does seem as if there is a wave of activity going on.
You could play if you get into my fund. Then you don't have to just look in through the window. You can actually be a part of it.
Okay. Well, you know.
We'll talk.
Let's get my risk-averse wife on board there.
Okay.
How about that?
Well, this is certainly a way to diversify that risk.
Well, and this sort of answers my next point here, was that a lot of communities, be that a sports community or even a church or something, have a perceived outside-looking-in sort of wall there. If you're on the outside of a community looking in and you're thinking, I don't want to use the word click. It's not a clicky sort of thing, but there are a circle of people around town who have been in this space for a while, and you guys all know each other. And to somebody who might think, man, I'm really interested in that. I have an idea, or I have some money that I've somehow come up with.
Mm-hmm.
Starting at the bottom, what are the different types of capital that anybody with an idea or wanting to start a company can raise, starting at, I would assume, sort of a friends and family sort of thing? Hey,
I got one before that.
Crowdfunding?
No.
Okay.
No. And it's funny because this is what I teach my undergrads and my MBA students. The first kind of capital is skin in the game, yours. Max out your credit cards, second mortgage your house, sell your pets, your children, whatever it takes. But to show that you have faith in your own ability to make this thing go. And okay. you have faith in your idea. So that's the most important thing that even future investors are going to look for. If you're not willing to put your money at risk in your own venture, right. then why should I put mine?
Sure.
So the first thing to do is get your own money in there. And okay. I'm not just talking sweat equity. I'm not just talking don't take a
Even though that counts.
It counts, of course.
If you have an idea, you got nothing if you're not willing to put sweat into
it. Sure, you got to put time and energy and sweat and all that kind of right. stuff, but you also have to put your own money into
okay.
it. I mean, you can max out your credit cards. Like I said, you can.
I have two kidneys. I don't need one of them.
I know a local entrepreneur. Yeah, there you go. I know a local entrepreneur that sold his condo, sold his car, moved in the basement of his parents' house to start his startup. And he is at over $120,000 a month now in revenue.
Wow. Okay.
Now that's putting skin in the game. And he is only funded with his own money.
So he just believed.
So he says,
I've got it.
Now,
this is going to happen.
If I was an investor, which I am, wouldn't I want to put money in his company?
Yeah.
Because he's got his own money.
Sure.
Okay. So your own capital, that's the first start.
Okay.
Then you do the friends, family, fools round.
Okay.
I'm sure you've heard of that.
Sure.
That's where you get Uncle Fred or the neighbor next door or, you know, anybody else that's willing to write you a check for something.
Okay.
I strongly encourage entrepreneurs, though, at least get an attorney to draw up an agreement for that one.
What typically, which that's a good point. What typically do friends and family expect out of that?
That's where you have to manage expectations.
All right. I mean, is there a standard where you say, all right, listen, give me $500 and I'll give you $1,000 after this is turned into something?
Well, you've got to work that out. And that's why I strongly encourage you to get an attorney to say how much equity you're getting. And it's common stock at that point. You know, so if Uncle Fred or, you know, Mr. Peterson from next door wants to invest in your company, you're going to.
But they're not yet accredited.
They're not yet accredited.
But how is that legal?
Well, it's legal if you get an attorney involved and you're only giving them common stock.
Gotcha.
Okay. And you can't make them any promises because you could very well lose their money. So be careful if it's someone you're going to have to look across the fence at or sit across the Thanksgiving table
right.
at and
sure.
say, you know, well, where's my $5,000? And you're going to have to explain that. So, but that's the next set of capital is that friends, family, and fool. And they invest in you if they believe in you. If they know you, if they trust you, they don't have to know anything about your business and
right.
probably won't do much due diligence because
right.
at that point in time, you probably don't have much to show other
yeah.
than your good faith and your personality and your
This is my record. This is
yeah.
what I am. Yeah,
you know me. You've lived next door to me for 12 years or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So that's that round. After that, well, in between all of this, you should try to get free money whenever you can. And by that, I mean grants, awards. You know, if you're students, you can compete in business plan competitions. But there are plenty of free money. There's plenty of
the
ways
guy in
to
the,
get free money.
The guy in the suit with the question marks. No,
yeah,
that's
no,
the Joker
no, that's
or
not,
the Riddler.
No.
Who am
but
I thinking of?
There's some government programs like SBIR, STTR. There are government grants to small companies.
Okay, but there's a pretty rigid process to get that money.
Oh, like it's pretty onerous, actually.
Fill out paperwork.
But it's free money.
All right.
It's
worth the effort.
Yeah, and some of it is not that hard.
I probably could have gone to a better school had I I should not say that. Ball State was a great school.
Okay.
I could have gone to a different school had I applied more and bothered to do the paperwork.
Yeah.
I would have had more choice.
Okay. But
anyway,
free money is free
Sorry,
money.
Ball State.
So sometimes it's worth it to go through that onerous process
right.
if you're going to get free money.
Yeah.
But after friends and family, the next step is probably angel investors.
Okay.
Angel investors invest their own money in companies. And they will do some due diligence. They usually invest in industries that they know. So doctors may invest in medical devices or pharmaceuticals or diagnostics
right.
or something
okay.
like that. Techies, you know, if they're engineers or computer science people, they may, and that's how they've made their money, they may invest in tech startups.
And typically these people are, you don't know them. Or you may have a connection to them
yeah.
through somebody else.
Yep.
Okay. Because the next question, logical question.
Sometimes they band together into groups. They form angel groups. Like 5 years ago, well, 10 years ago, there were none around here. Maybe Anchorage Angels. But now there's Enterprise Angels. There's Louisville Angel Network. There's Innovation Angels right across the river on your side.
Okay.
There's Bluegrass Angels in Lexington. There's Queen City Angels in Cincinnati. So there's all these. There's a Lincoln Trails Venture Group in Elizabethtown. So there's all these angel groups, these high net worth individuals, accredited investors that have gotten together and said, hey, let's all kind of do this as a group and, you know, get deal flow, look at companies, do some due diligence and decide whether or not we want to.
And that's their job for the most part, right?
Yeah, a lot of them are retired.
Okay.
Yeah, a lot of them do it full time. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you meet these people?
Aha. Uh-huh.
That's the the next logical question is, okay, these guys are there.
Yeah, in any given city, there's usually a venture club of sorts. And in Louisville, it's Venture Connectors.
And you are involved in?
I am. Okay. We've recently gone through a rebranding, so we're not a club anymore.
Good.
And we're not just Louisville anymore.
Call it a click. Venture click.
No. It's Venture Connectors. We're Venture Connectors. And we meet monthly, and we have a lot of investors that are our members that come to our luncheons. And then we have entrepreneurs that pitch. They give their five-minute pitch if they're seeking capital. So it's a way to bring entrepreneurs and investors together.
Okay,
and then
good.
You can do a Google search in any city, and there's usually an angel network that you can get involved with. Usually the chambers of commerce will have a connection, like our GLI, Enterprise Core, has a connection to the various angel groups. But a lot of it is who you know. It's about building relationships.
It never hurts anybody at any time making a new connection.
Exactly.
That's what I say. Mm-hmm. All right, angel investors, and then?
Well, if you still need money, after that, it's usually the institutional.
Or if you're working on a larger
absolutely. Playing field. If you want to grow faster, you've proven out your concept, you've taken some risk out of your business, either by getting some customers already, you know, the dogs are eating the dog food, getting prototypes, getting, you know, revenue already in the door. So you've taken some risk out of your business, and now you need a larger infusion of capital. So if it's a million or less, it's usually angels.
Okay.
If it's a million or more, you usually go for the institutional.
You go on Shark
investors.
Tank.
Well, that, yeah.
Right?
Love,
is that
I
what we're talking? Because those guys have.
They're angel investors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, are they?
Oh, yeah. They're investing their own money.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But all of the people that go on that show have a prototype or have some record of sales behind them. Mm-hmm. Or wearing, you know, because they always ask, well, how many stores? What's your distribution? And all these very smart questions to ask. So we're not investing in an idea. We're investing in a existing business.
And that's the space angel investors play in.
Okay.
Now, I love that show, too, but you realize it's part entertainment.
Totally.
Okay.
Get it. The Cuban speaks. I listen when the Cuban speaks. This guy's entertaining to me.
And by the way, Venture Connectors does a takeoff on that called Venture Sharks.
Right.
We do it once every year, and we give away free money.
I had Allie Trutman on the podcast before.
Yeah, she was our most recent winner.
She was the most recent winner.
Yeah.
I recommend you listen. It was a great podcast.
Oh, well, yeah. I will.
You know, her energy level is through the roof.
She's
it's
awesome.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we got Angel, then we got to Venture Capital.
Wait, back to Venture Sharks. You realized that Zach Pennington won 2 years ago.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Uh-huh. Kentucky Chia.
Oh.
They won 2 years ago. And our first winner was Dr. Alice Cash with Surgical Serenity Solutions. So they're the three entrepreneurs that have won Venture Sharks.
I'm going to have.
You should
I'm jot that
here.
Name down.
Mm-hmm.
All righty. What would you say, let's go back to the angel investor, because I would imagine that most people around town who are working on something are probably going to fall somewhere between friends and family to get things started and trying to get the attention of an angel investor. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's accurate? Most companies in town are looking for?
Well, there are some companies that are doing it without any equity investment. In other words, when you take on equity capital, like from angels or venture capitalists, you give away a part of your company.
Right.
It's very expensive money.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is. So you should only take it if you need it and if you need what they bring to the table other than just the cash.
Okay.
Because you're giving up equity, you could be giving up control of the company, you could be giving up a lot of the decision making. So it's expensive capital. So if you don't need it, if you can do it on your own.
Right.
I say do it on your own.
Okay. If you're going to approach, if you think, oh man, okay, I need some money, whether I need to hire more people or whatever the reason is, what's the number one thing that somebody should have checked off their list before they approach an angel group?
Well, they should have their act together. I said that clean. They should have their stuff together.
Okay. I mean, is there any specific sort of... You know, the dreaded PowerPoint presentation. And are there certain figures you should have? I mean, if somebody's going to be buttoned up, what are the elements that they need to have buttoned up?
Okay, investors are going to invest in you, in the entrepreneur and the management team. So that's what they ought to have buttoned up. And if while the investor is talking to the entrepreneur, any red flags are raised, like they don't know how to answer a question about the market or about the competition or about their distribution – or about their competitors, then a red flag goes up and they're going to lose all credibility and the investor's probably not going to make the investment. So as an entrepreneur, the way to get all buttoned up is not so much a PowerPoint. It's to do your homework.
Okay.
Understand your market. Understand your competitors. Understand your distribution. Understand your customers. Biggest thing.
Yeah.
Right there. You could be building the coolest technological gadget out there, but if no one's going to pay any money for it, then all you have is a really cool gadget. You don't have a company.
Yeah. Well, and let, yeah, okay. I'm just as devil's advocate.
Go ahead.
Say, I need some money to develop a couple of new things to take to market to see how that's going to work out. And because, you know, usually somebody will roll something out and the consumer will find other ways to use it that was not the original intention. That creates a whole new opportunity.
Sometimes,
over here.
Yeah.
So.
Sometimes.
Okay.
But I would encourage them to, before they even build anything, go talk to customers. Find out what the pain is in the marketplace. Don't even try to solve something that's not a pain. Because I just heard a guest speaker last night in the Kaufman program that said, are you making a vitamin pill or a pain pill? Because a vitamin pill is a nice to have, but a pain pill is a mandatory. You're solving a problem.
Sure, yeah. Immediate gratification.
Yeah. So is it a need to have or a nice to have? Make sure you're building a need to have. So talk to your customers.
Well, everybody needs to have vitamins, but
I do too. But
I don't take them.
I do.
I should.
Well, that's a whole other conversation.
I know.
I also eat chia seeds.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
The lack of my nutritional health is a recurring theme in these conversations. I need to just do something about it. Anyhow. All right. Once they've approached, they got they're buttoned up. They've got everything going. They get in front of some angel guys and gals, and they have this money. And what type of accountability is there with, I mean, what does that look like when somebody's in front of and they have to report on it? Is that an individual basis or?
Yeah, some angels are more hands-on than others. Some of them, when they write a check, they want to also help you with the company, hands-on, not just a board seat. I mean, they'll help you one or two days a week. I mean, I know some angels that do that. Other angels just write you a check and, you know, say, okay, just report back to me. You know, have board meetings or give me the minutes or hit your milestones and let me know how you're doing, that kind of thing.
Well,
it depends.
This is kind of a weird question, but let's say you're working in a day job, but you've got an idea and you've put a little bit of, you put your money into it, you put some equity, and you think, man, this would really take off if I could focus on this full time. Do you use angel money to pay yourself so you have the time to work on that project?
Well,
Is that sort of a weird legal thing?
No. A couple of things. Number one, don't quit your day job until you're pretty darn sure that you've taken some risk out so that you're confident that you can make this go.
Sure.
And I know plenty of entrepreneurs that you know, got to that point, quit. Ooh.
Biscuits are done.
I'm Italian. I talk with my hands. Let me move that away from me. Sorry, you can edit that. So I know plenty of entrepreneurs that had very, very secure, very, very high-paying jobs that when it got to the point, you know, after they're working in their garage or working out of their, you know, home office, they said, all right, fine, I'm going to make that leap. I'm going to quit my job and go do this full-time. And they do it.
Okay.
You know, and that's a big leap of faith. But I encourage them to keep your day job as long as you can until it becomes time, you know, and you'll know it when you can quit that day job and go do this full-time. And, yes, most of the time if an investor's going to put money in, they want you to be working on it full-time, 24/7.
Okay.
One of the best quotes that I ever heard from a famous venture capitalist is, but of course the salaries are not going to be lush.
Right. Yeah.
Okay?
But just,
and
you
one
know.
Of the famous quotes is, I want my, from an investor, I want my entrepreneurs to sleep at night, just not that well.
Okay.
So
that makes
you're not going to be making six figures as a startup company CEO.
Right.
You're going to be making enough to pay your rent and put bread on the table, and that's about it.
Well, chances are, They don't sleep much anyway because they're working all the time.
Well, they should be. If they're passionate about their endeavor, then yeah.
Yeah, they can't wait to get out of bed
exactly.
and start working. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah. And that's what angel investors look for. That
and
passion.
I think, and I'm totally generalizing here because I'm not sure who's listening to this thing. But the reason that I'm doing this is because there are people out there who are working on things and they don't know what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know who to talk to. They don't. They're thinking, I think I can do this, and I have a little bit of revenue. But if I could just work on it full time, but
well, there are great resources in this region that a person like that can turn to before they actually quit their day job.
Ding! Name those resources.
Okay, one is the Kaufman Entrepreneur Program.
Okay,
that I'm a business coach in, and it's a 10-week course that the Kaufman Foundation is world-renowned for its entrepreneurial work. But anyway, we use their curriculum, and it meets every Monday night from 6 to 9 for 10 weeks. We do a session in the fall and a session in the spring. We just had our last session last night, by the way.
Okay.
And
for this term?
For the fall. Okay. So we'll start again in the spring. And there is a cost to it. But what you get out of that class.
Yeah, but it's less than $1,000.
It's less than $1,000. Yeah. You get access to a ton of angel investors because they're our guest speakers. They come in and speak, and then they stick around. And then you get a business coach assigned to you to work one-on-one with you during that 10 weeks and beyond. I still talk to some of my Kaufman entrepreneurs from 2 years ago. So you get connected into this, you know, that click that you were talking about? So the Kaufman gets you connected into the click.
Okay.
The other thing is the Enterprise Corps, which is a division of GLI.
Sure, well, they've been
they
on.
They have so much stuff that they can offer startups. The other thing is Venture Connectors. Come to a Venture Connectors meeting. All the angel investors are there, not all of them, but a cross-section of them, and you'll get, again, plugged into that community. KSTC out of Lexington has a lot of resources for startup entrepreneurs in the state. There's all kinds of there are grassroots organizations that are just popping up left and right. Louisville Digital Association.
Yeah.
There's the Network of Entrepreneurial Women. There used to be the Inventors Council. I think that merged with something else at this point. There's Forge Louisville.
Mm-hmm.
There's all these things. There's clubs at Louisville. There's the Entrepreneurship Club, the Cardinal Venture Club. There's Idea Mornings. There's all kinds of stuff. I mean, if an entrepreneur wants to get plugged in,
they can get. They just have to get off the couch and do it.
Exactly. There's okay. no excuse not to do it.
All right. Well, I guess Google is your friend in that case.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yep. And Tendai Cherasika, who works at Enterprise Corp.
Sure.
And maybe you've already
Excellent
done
Excellent T.
Him.
He's okay, been in. You betcha.
Excellent T. Yeah. Yeah. Follow him on Twitter. I just learned how to do Twitter like last week.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, wow.
I know.
Okay.
I'm a little late to the game here. But Tendai sends out a weekly email, I think, that just has all the different events on it and all the different things that you could do and
okay.
stuff that's happening in the entrepreneurial community. And it's great.
So it is, and it's a small community.
It's
that can
bigger.
Once you join it, you're very well connected.
But it's small, but it's not exclusive.
Right.
I mean, it really it has open arms to anybody who has. I will have coffee with anyone that has an idea that they want to run by me, and I will try to connect that person with whoever he or she needs to get connected to.
Okay.
And there are entrepreneurs out there that can vouch for that. I mean, Alex Frohmeyer didn't know me from anyone. Called me up one day and said, "Can we have coffee?" I'm like, yeah. So I met him for a coffee, and I start talking about all these things he's to do. Half of them he had already done because he's just that kind of an entrepreneur.
Sure. Engineer.
Yeah, you know, don't roll your eyes. I'm
left-brained. You left-brained people.
But, if there's a startup person out there with an idea that doesn't know where to turn, it's their own fault because there's so much stuff
okay.
that's in this region that they could take advantage of.
Well, it's just
a very open community. We want more people.
And growing. Like you said, it's growing too.
Mm-hmm. It's growing, and we're getting more and more investors too, which is exciting.
Yeah. Well, how do we connect with you online?
With me?
Twitter. We tweet Twitter now, right?
Yeah.
What's your Twitter handle? Do you remember it?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's because I've lived in three states, really. I think it's New Jersey, California, Kentucky girl. So it's NJ_CA_KY girl.
Okay.
I think that's my
Twitter
handle.
Let's work on those underscores.
Handle, is that what we call
it? Yeah, handle. Yeah.
But my consulting company is Sunflower Business Ventures, and I have a website.
.com. Okay.
And I have a website, and you can contact me through there.
LinkedIn?
Yeah, I'm on LinkedIn.
People free to link in with you?
They can link in with me.
Finding that a very valuable resource. Doing research for these types of conversations.
There you go.
I'm popping up.
And then, of course, there's the entrepreneur happy hours, which is where I met you.
Yeah, startup drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's
startup
great.
Drinks. Mm-hmm.
So great. Well, we want people to connect with you.
Absolutely.
I know this might have felt like investing 101 sort of thing, but I think that sort of basic knowledge is, for somebody who's not in that space, is kind of important. It's obviously important for somebody to know it, but it's not easy to find. Okay, here's A, B, C, D.
Well, I'm passionate about entrepreneurs and startup companies. So anybody that wants to talk to me, I'd be more than happy to make time for. And the Vint on Frankfurt Avenue is my second office. So on any given morning, I may be meeting with students at 6:30, 7 a.m. there.
Okay.
They kind of know me.
It's a nice vibe over there. I used to hang out there.
Well, and I know the owner, so
he's
a local entrepreneur. And I believe in supporting our local entrepreneurs.
I like that. Okay, I think we can wrap.
Okay.
That's good.